Hi, everyone. Welcome to Data Science with Sam, the podcast that explores how we can shape artificial intelligence to a work for everyone. I'm your host, Sam, and today we're diving deep into AI governance, ethics, and why representation matters more than ever in our rapidly evolving tech landscape. We're joined by leaders from AWAI, the Asian Women's Alliance for AI, to discuss not just the technical challenges of governing AI, but the human imperative to ensure diverse voices are at the table when we're building the future. Having said that, I'm going to invite our guest, Pat Binishani and Yuvika Sharma. Thank you for joining me for this episode. I'm really glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for having us.
So before we get started, I would like Padmini and Yuvika to introduce yourself to our listeners and viewers. So let's start with Padmini.
Okay. Thank you so much for having us here, Sam, and it's great to do this with Yuvika. So my name is Padmini Soni, and I'm the founder of Resonance AI. I'm also the head of responsible growth at the AI Leadership Institute, and I have been in the tech space for over 25 years. And more recently, in the last five, six years, I've been focused on AI. I am involved in AI literacy, AI adoption, and AI business transformation. Yuvika and I founded the Asian Women Advancing AI, a global community for with the vision of making it the go-to place for Asian women in AI. So we have a mission of, you know, making this worldwide. We are already global, and having people join us, share their knowledge, and making it a safe space for Asian women in AI. Yuvika and I are also in part of a think tank, the AI 2030, where we are involved in the Responsible AI Pledge and also an AI maturity assessment. We are also co-authoring a book along with Noel on OpenAI GPT builders. So we are joined at the hip on several ventures, and I'm glad to be doing this podcast with her here. Thank you.
Thanks, Padmini. Yuvika, over to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us here, Sam. It's really great to be doing this with Padmini. So hello, everybody. My name is Yuvika Sharma. And I've been in the data and AI space for over 23 years. I feel my life has come to a full circle where I started in data and data warehousing on Wall Street, working at several large Fortune 500 companies, you know, doing digital transformation at Accenture, you know, working at pharma companies, now working with a lot of big tech clients in international trade. But I also work with a lot of startups at Cornell Tech, HPS Partners, and I'm also advising some startups in the New York tech ecosystem. And as Padmini said, super passionate about empowering women. So I think with respect to growing AWAI, I think the main mission is that how do we get more people in the space, and how do we empower people? I think uplifting others is something that gives me a lot of joy. And yeah, we need to have, you know, more diversity in the space. And yeah, super excited to be here today. Thank you for having us again.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your extensive professional journey with my listeners. It's great to see the stuff you've been doing for AI community, and thank you for everything you've been doing so far. Having said that, we want to dive deep into our Q&A section. So let's start with the fundamentals aligned with the topic for this podcast. So in your opinion, what is AI governance, and why is it so critical in today's rapidly evolving tech landscape? And I would like to start with Padmini's perspective, and then we'll move over to Yuvika's. Padmini, over to you.
Sure. Thanks, Sam. So when I think of AI governance, or when typically people think of AI governance, it is refers to like frameworks, policies, standards, processes. But in my mind, it is also beyond that. It is kind of a mindset that you have to adopt so that you can develop, deploy, monitor, and even decommission AI systems. So it is basically having this framework in place to be like the technical guardrail, so that organizational policies like, you know, accountability, ethics, external regulations, all these are built into the systems. In today's landscape, AI can influence almost everything. Like you have healthcare decisions, you have financial markets, and you need this robust governance sort of, you know, that ensures that these systems are, these powerful systems are safe, reliable, transparent. Because when I think of responsible AI, and which is directly related to governance, it is basically, it is when what you build is keeping people in mind, and how you build begins and ends again with people in mind. So to me, AI governance in this evolving tech landscape is critical, because without it, AI doesn't fail in isolation, it fails in society. So without it, we risk unintended harms, loss of public trust, and, you know, ethical lapses, which can undermine both innovation and the well-being of our people.
Love your perspective. Yuvika, I'd like to hear more from you as well.
Yeah, so just kind of picking back off of what Padmini said, right, that it's, you know, policies and frameworks and standards and establishing mechanism. I like to think of it more like, okay, how do we ensure that we have a way of tackling the madness, right? So it's almost like establishing a rule book, right, for digital tools. So think of it as the traffic laws for the digital highway, right? Without proper rules and enforcement, you're actually going to get chaos, right? So if you have AI tools, or even if you have like cars, right, you want to make sure there is some way to make sure that things are happening in a proper way, right? That there are right rules defined. And it's quite important because things are advancing at a breakneck pace, right? So we are already seeing capabilities emerge faster than our ability to understand their implications. So let's say just for ChatGPT, it went from 0 to 100 million users in just 2 months, right? Faster than any technology in history. So, and while we are still figuring out the fundamental questions like liability, and what's going to happen when an AI system makes a mistake, right? How do you prevent these systems from perpetuating harmful biases? And especially when these systems are going to impact areas in healthcare, criminal justice, we want to make sure that there are proper guardrails and processes and impact assessments that are built into place, right? As Padmini said, we risk creating a world where algorithmic decisions, you know, lack accountability and transparency or fairness, and that is not fair, right? We need to make sure that these systems are fair and they're operating and they're benefiting everybody. So that's why we feel like having AI governance is essential. So the moment you start thinking about implementing AI, or you think about a use case, like AI governance needs to be like right there, hand in hand.
No. Definitely. I mean, I totally agree with both of your viewpoints here, because as in my point of view, it is imperative that AI governance is something that bridges the gap between what's technically possible and what's socially responsible. Because, you know, obviously, before building something in the AI space, we should ask the question to us, like, should we build this? And if we build this, how do we build it responsibly? And definitely that resonates with both of your viewpoints on this one. Having said that, I wanted to move to our next question for this episode. And that's kind of like ties back to, as you both said, that how are we going to tackle this bias and fairness situation, right? So in your opinion, how can we actually ensure that AI systems are fair and unbiased in their decision making? Because there are a lot of nuances there, right? So it's kind of like, you know, developing the guardrails. So I'd love to know your opinions, like how do we actually build that foundation of having an ethical or governance framework? And I would like to start with Yuvika for this particular question.
Yeah, sure. So Sam, this is actually a very tricky challenge, because bias can creep in multiple stages, right? It can creep in from the data that we use to train models, or how we design algorithms, and to how we deploy things in the real world. You'll be surprised, there are many different kinds of biases, right? There is historical bias, right, at the time where you're kind of collecting the data. Then there is representation bias. There is also something called sampling bias, right? The way the data is sampled. Then there is label bias, like folks who are actually annotating the data. And then, of course, there is algorithmic bias, where the model learns from patterns because of the data that it was fed, right? And it continues to amplify those biases, right? And there is also interaction bias. Like there was an example where Microsoft had launched a chatbot, Tay, and that actually learned from toxic interactions, that was given on Twitter feeds, and the chatbot just learned from those interactions and it further amplified those biases. So the problem is quite challenging. And we also learned with the famous Amazon study that happened, where they had launched a recruiting tool and it was systemically downgrading resumes from women. And why it was happening? Because there was this historical hiring data that reflected decades of male-dominating hiring practices, right? And the AI basically learned to replicate those human biases, and it didn't know how to eliminate them. And the solution required to make sure that, we ensure that these systems are fair and unbiased requires a lot of things at different levels. First, we need to make sure that we have diverse data sets, right, that represent a full spectrum of people who are going to be impacted by these systems, right? So you need to think, if I'm designing a solution like an AI system, who is going to be impacted by this, right? Do I have the right data? Are those people actually reflected, in those data sets, right? We also need to make sure that we have diverse teams who are building the technology. So we need to have people who can actually think and call out those things. And there is enough research that shows that, homogeneous teams are more likely to miss blind spots, especially the bias blind spots. And the third thing that comes to mind is that we need to have ongoing auditing and testing, and not just at launch, because these systems are going to continue to evolve. They are going to learn. The data is going to change. The situation is going to change, right? So it's not something that's like, one and done. It's a static thing. And there are things that are being done, right? Like, for example, IBM has come up with this fairness toolkit, the 360 toolkit, that can actually help detect biases across different demographic groups, right? While others are implementing red teaming exercises, or maybe another way to put it is how we have adversarial attacks. You can have like these adversarial biasing system checks, right, to make sure that you're checking for bias in the data, right, and you attack and you try to break the system. So those would be some things. And when you are doing audits, you're training the data, you also want to make sure that you have human oversight, right? You want to have diverse people in the room. You want to have ethicists and domain experts who can actually call out those things. If it's just a machine learning engineer or an AI ML engineer, they are not going to think about all those things, right? And which is okay, because they are expert in their field, right? But to make sure that we have diverse representation, you need to have subject matter experts and diverse people in the room, like, ethicists and, all the people who are going to be impacted. So those would be some recommendations.
Thanks, Yuvika. No, definitely. These are very relatable when it comes to, I believe, the building AI governance. Like you mentioned, that we need to have human oversight, and that's very important, because at the end, we do actually have a morally obligated to making sure our AI tools and applications are not showing biased results. And thanks for some of the examples that you shared that came up on the news about some of the toolkits that started showing some discriminatory outcomes. And I remember Google also kind of had to take down their, image generation platform, because it was kind of like, tailored towards a particular race, and that's kind of created a lot of ethical concerns.
Yes. So
thanks, Yuvika, for your perspective. Now, I would like to go to Padmini to hear her viewpoints and perspective on the similar matter, because it's a very growing concern, and I, I'd love to see your viewpoints as well, Padmini.
And I can just say ditto and just leave it at that. But no, there is, I echo a lot of what Yuvika said. It is very critical that we build for people with the people who we build for. So we absolutely have to have their voices early on. We need to have this governance shift left. Right. You know, we have to have these, I'm thinking of this particular example that I heard. Actually, it was a few years back, where this lady was talking about, you know, these self-driving cars, right? You're designing it, and you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, aspect ratios, what are the two, you know, features you need to have. And she said that, of course, there were a bunch of men in the room discussing, but then when it came to actually, you know, the chassis and the height of it or whatever, she was talking about women wear heels. You know, when you're getting into the car, you know, you should be sure that the heel doesn't get like kind of stuck in the while getting in. So she was, if there were just a bunch of men designing this, they won't know better, right? Because it's not intentional. It's just not the lack of awareness of, you know, problems at certain, you know, whether it's gender or whether it's race, what you face. So I think it's very critical to reduce. I feel we can never eliminate bias, because these models have been trained on, you know, tons of data from, you know, from the internet, and it'll take a very long time before we can make it. But we have to strive towards mitigating it. And like Yuvika mentioned, the IBM, I think Fairness 360, the other one that I know of is like the Microsoft Fair Loan. You know, for that, to use that also, you need to have some coding skills, but you can build that into your development pipeline. But what I like even more actually is the Google What If toolkit. So in that, what you can do is, besides just for integration, having just a snippet of code, it is no code, or actually very low code. And you can actually take your data set and you can upload it in there, and you can see, check for, you know, whether there is bias in that. So we have to employ these, what are available. We have to employ them, use them when we are building our data sets, when we are building our algorithms. And we, like Yuvika said, we need these voices up at the start, and then we need to be continuously monitoring. It is not that we did it, it looked fair, and now we are good to go. Like you said, there are different kinds of biases that are there throughout this entire pipeline up until, you know, deploying and then monitoring again. So we need to have a human in the loop. We have to have human on the loop. So we have to have these kind of, you know, frameworks in place, so that we are closely viewing and monitoring and testing these systems. Yeah.
Thanks, Padmini. I really like that, you know, the example you mentioned about that the autonomous car, and where I feel like this is where we need diverse perspectives.
Yes.
We also need a perspective from women that, you know, okay, what kind of constraint you might envision for a self, you know, driven car. So that's why I think we need to bring people together from a different race or from, you know, societies, you know, stuff. And we have to brainstorm that, what are the factors that could undermine some of this AI innovation stuff? And that kind of like brings me to my next question, that, you know, it's kind of like we are into this interesting tension right now, where we're trying to balance between innovation and ethics, right? So what would be kind of like that common ground that you find out, right? So that's, I would love to hear your opinions on that. So that's kind of my next question, that, you know, how do we balance between innovation and ethics in AI development? Because at the end, we need to make sure we are steadily, you know, moving towards not AGI, but towards in a certain state where AI can be more of like a tool that can serve more the betterment of the society than being the kind of like the antagonist for the society, right? So how do we balance that innovation ethics, and what example that you can throw in that kind of we can kind of like use it as a more of like a blueprint for AI landscape in future. So I'd love to start with you, Padmini, on this particular question, and then we'll move to you, Ivica, for her opinions on that as well.
Sure. And coincidentally, about 2 weeks back, I was chairing a roundtable or a panel about AI governance. Is it the missing link between innovation and trust? You know, and it is, I think, AI governance will enable, you know, innovating quickly, because what we are doing by that, by planting governance ahead of time and not as a window dressing later, we are de-risking the systems. And one of my favorite things to talk about is the Microsoft Hacks Toolkit, you know, is the human AI experience toolkit. And that has 18 guidelines in it. And it has, which are spread across four phases, you know, what to do initially, you know, what to do during interaction, what to do when something goes wrong, and what to do over time. So these 18 guidelines are split across. And they are, I think they are a great starting point and a blueprint to sort of make our systems, you know, fair and having this right governance in place early on. So right at the start, for instance, it talks about you have to let your audience know, the user of your system know what the AI can do and what it cannot do. You know, who is it helping? And you have to figure out who is it not helping or who is it harming. So you go down guideline by guideline. They've got brilliant examples. They also have a workbook that you can download and you can use it as in your teams. You can, right at the start, you sit down together, you go through every guideline, you identify the ones that are relevant to your system. And once you identify those, then you go into, you know, how we do this whole risk impact assessment. You know, what is the probability and the impact of the, if a risk is realized. So this is a way to do that. And one of the nicest things I like about it is the playground that it has, you know, the playbook or playground, because what you can do is you can actually go in there and say, I'm developing a chatbot. You know, this chatbot is actually invoked. It doesn't come up on its own. And whatever is your system, you can go through level by level. And on the right, it starts populating all the tests that you need to do to ensure that it works. So I think tools like these are great for us to employ early on to sort of, you know, ensure that governance is in place. And then there are other, you know, as part of that, I have other examples too. I don't know if you have time to share, but one quick thing, and then I'll hand it over to you, Vika. For instance, this is one thing that I talk about from a personal experience. I remember when my parents first came over to the US way back when, I remember we were with my family who was here, and they were like, which restaurant do you want to go to? And they were like, we don't care, you know. So in the Indian context, we don't care was like, oh, you don't care about us, kind of, you know, it was, they were coming from the perspective of, it doesn't matter, you can choose whatever you want to. But so we have to understand that where we are using AI, you know, whether this, the societal part of it is also, does it speak the language of the society? You know, is it being deployed where it has, what it has been built for? So there are lots of aspects of this, and the conversation is, you know, will be ongoing, but we should start somewhere, and now is the time to start. Yesterday.
That's a great point. I mean, I feel like that this AI, you know, it has a lot of long way to go when it comes to this being adopted and customized in every societal landscape. So thank you for, and I think that's a great example. Thanks, Padmini. Over to you, Ivica. Love to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've had a number of conversations with technologists who worry that regulation will stifle innovation. But having spent, over at least 10 years out of my 23-year career in compliance and working with lawyers, I basically would like to, you know, flip the narrative. Can irresponsible AI actually slow progress? And if somebody would ask me that, I would say absolutely yes, right? Because when AI systems fail spectacularly, it can cause harm, right? It can create backlash. And also, you know, it can lead to loss of trust, right? That can set entire fields back years. So I don't know if you remember when we were having the election for President Trump, the very first one, and there was this scandal that came to light. So it was the Cambridge Analytica scandal that impacted the attitudes towards data-driven innovation, right? So they use the data that was, you know, available, and they actually used it to influence, you know, the voters' decisions, and which was without people's consent. And then also the example of early autonomous vehicle accidents, right, which affected public acceptance of self-driving cars. Of course, I would still be nervous today in sitting a Waymo. I'd be very, very honest. I love technology, but I wouldn't feel comfortable, right, because that trust is not there. So some of the most successful AI companies have found that building in safety and ethics from the ground up can actually accelerate development. So Anthropic is such a great example, right? They have made constitutional AI and safety research core to their approach, and they're still pushing the boundaries of what's possible. Similarly, companies doing responsible AI often discover new opportunities and market advantages. So that said, there is a real tension with speed, right? Because everybody is trying to race, and now it feels every week there is like something new that is coming up. Sometimes even we have a hard time, you know, keeping up with what's happening, because there is a real race. And in my opinion, the key is to be smart, right? And be mindful of where you apply the friction. Not every application needs the same level of oversight. So talking about oversight, I think it's important. You need to make sure that you understand where you're applying AI, but also figuring out where you need to put the oversight, right? So like if it's a simple use case, you want to use AI to organize your photos, you're not going to need the same level of scrutiny. But yes, you know, if you are going to be using an AI that's going to be making decisions about medical diagnosis or criminal justice decisions, absolutely, you need to think about those things. And there are countless examples I can give where facial recognition technologies are being used. And unfortunately, they are leading to arrest of wrong individuals, right? And the shame and, you know, the loss of pride that it brings to those people, it's not fair, right? So I just want people to think that when people are talking about using AI responsibly, and yes, it could even slow down innovation, we want you to think about the example of you know, how drugs are developed in pharmaceutical industry. And of course, I've spent, you know, a number of years in pharmaceutical as well. So drug trials, you know, take time and they cost money, but they are happening for a reason, right? They prevent disasters, right? And they build trust. And that's what makes the widespread adoption possible. So I think we need to take a similar risk-based approach for AI and making sure that we are innovating responsibly.
That's, I think, a great way to kind of like address this question, Yuvika, because I do believe that, you know, we can definitely carry forward with the AI innovation, but that's not should not be at the risk of putting human life in jeopardy. You know, like we have to think about the societal aspect of stuff. And that's also kind of like kept me thinking while you both are talking about your perspective. It's kind of like giving me an idea about that. We are not bringing a lot of visibility to AI governance toolkits out there. Like if you ask someone, an AI enthusiast, a learner, so okay, tell me about some AI tools, they're going to talk about a lot of like low code, no code AI development tools that they're using. But if you ask the AI learners about, okay, do you know about any AI governance toolkits that's going to help you to kind of like build enterprise-based AI solution, you probably won't get an answer from a lot of them. So while you're talking, I feel like, you know, that's something also we probably have to think. And I think this is a kind of a food for thought for my listeners, is that think about that, how many AI governance toolkits you come across or what you have done to build a responsible AI. I mean, when you're trying to build something in the AI landscape, think about how it's going to be societally acceptable, or is it something that not is something like ethically not possible. You know, like, you know, think about that, ask yourself, and also think about if you can use the toolkits that Yuvika and Padmini mentioned by some of the big techs. They started building some AI governance toolkits. Try to use it for your AI development purpose, because that will definitely help you to try to, you know, bring that balance between innovation and ethics. And also, you know, it's not about just, you know, building something as an AI engineer, but also think about the, how we can build responsibility that can benefit the masses in future. So that's the main goal, because innovation is for the betterment of the society. So think responsibly for that. So thanks.
And can I add in one thing though, Sam?
Sure, definitely.
Yeah, I think we also have to look at the benchmarks that are available, because a lot of the benchmarks are more on what the like the LLM can do. You know, how good is it at math? You know, does it solve PhD level questions? But there are responsible AI benchmarks, but we need more of those. They are lagging. So we absolutely need people to also focus on these benchmarks and look at it. And Stanford puts out this global AI index report. So definitely would love to have your listeners also check that out and look at that.
Yeah. That's a great point, Padmini, because whenever you see new release version of a model came out, they only talked about the benchmark between how superior that model is in solving math problems, how superior that model is in kind of like addressing some qualitative or quantitative stuff. But I feel like actually the majority of the benchmarks are more on the quantitative side, but I feel like we also need to think about the qualitative aspect of that, and I think that's where the responsible AI comes into the picture. So I think that's a great point. I believe some of the, you know, model development companies like OpenAI, Anthropics and stuff, they're going to keep focusing more on adding those responsible AI-related benchmarks in their model release papers going forward. So we would know that how responsible the model is, how ethically that framework is sustainable in the enterprise infrastructure or elsewhere. So that's a great point. Thanks, Padmini, for bringing that up. So now I would like to take this discussion to a different tangent. I would like to hear about something that I'm very excited to know from your journey in the AI space so far, as you both mentioned that you are the co-founders of Asian Women Advancing AI. I would love to know about your journey, that how you started this organization, what you're doing, and I'm pretty sure all my listeners will be interested to know about your organization, how they can be a part of it. So I want to start with that. What inspired the founding of this organization? Why is it critical to create spaces specifically for Asian women in the AI and tech ecosystem today? And I would definitely wanted to, you know, share my sincere thankfulness for starting this endeavor. So please take it away. And I would like to start with Padmini first, to kind of like share your thoughts on what inspired you to, you know, founding this organization and how you want to kind of create this space for the Asian women in the AI and tech landscape.
So thank you. So this actually, the journey, though, the end result was the creation of this, but we both have, Yubika and I had very similar experiences and journeys. And when we were part of another community, we still are a part of that amazing community, the iHeart AI community. But we met there, and I remember the first coffee chat that Yubika and I had, we shared our experiences about feeling alone in this, you know, because each one of us, like, I'm remote. So we are here with our laptop trying to do the best we can in this whole AI space, upskilling, you know, understanding the AI news. But there's such an overload of it. You don't know where to go, what to look. And you feel alone. You know, you feel like, oh my God, am I the only one who's not able to consume all this, understand all this? You wake up in the morning and you feel you're already, like, you know, a week behind, though you've just consumed all that information the previous day. So so when we started having this discussion, we realized that there may be others who feel like this in this space, you know? And we also realized, coming from our Asian backgrounds, there is this cultural aspect that looms large over us. We tend to be quieter, which then, you know, is perceived as weakness, or we do not you know, but yeah, like we do not speak up as often as we should. And though I'm not like that, and I don't think Yuvika is like that, but we know of people who have been like that. We have been in rooms where, you know, you have someone come later and say, you know, I actually won't be able to deliver that tomorrow, but you know, when they asked me, I had to say yes because I thought that, you know, I had to make that delivery or whatever, you know. So we don't speak up, we don't speak our mind. And AI is something where we absolutely 100% need diverse perspectives. That's what we've been talking all along. And if we have to have this taken forward, we have to embody it. And we looked around, we found there are other Asian, you know, women in tech kind of, you know, organizations, but something specific to Asian women in AI was missing. And we felt that maybe, you know, why wait for somebody else to create it? You know, why don't we do this and we take it forward? And the love that we have, you know, received for this has been amazing. The community, the people in the community are amazing. And we've made some great connects. And I will let Yuvika share more about what the community is about. And, you know, it's been so fulfulfilling.
Yeah, thanks, Padmini. And I'm pretty sure my listeners are more excited to know about the journey. So, yeah,
we would like all your listeners, especially the Asian women in AI, to please join our community. We have just amazing stuff that Yuvika will share with you. It's a great space to be in. So over to you, Yuvika.
Yeah, so as Padmini said, right, that we saw a gap, and of course we were alone. And the cultural aspect is definitely there. Having been in the tech space, you know, for 23 years, and Padmini, you know, over 25 years, we still feel that while you see people on LinkedIn, we still don't feel that there are enough women in the room. So I'll give you an example. Just last year, I had gone to a solution architect workshop, and there were about 40 people in the room. Sam, I looked around, and I was still the only woman. Forget any Asian woman being in the room. The only woman in the room. And when I started in data warehousing 23 years ago on Wall Street, I was the only girl on that team, you know, at the bank. So it's still a problem, right? So as Padmini said, right, that there are women, but Asian women don't tend to speak up much, right? And when it comes to leadership and visibility and influencing ethical and strategic AI conversations, we feel that our voices are missing, right? So we met at a conference. So to give you like a quick backdrop of the story, you know, is we had met at the community, and you can probably see Padmini and me at a lot of conferences together doing a lot of stuff. So we ended up in DC at this conference, and we were just talking to somebody, and right at the whim, we're like, you know what, there's no Asian community. So this was October 27th. I remember the date very clearly. And then we were like, you know what? There is no community. We should do something about it. November 12th, within 2 weeks, we launched the community. We didn't know what it was going to be like, but we knew that, yes, we need to have a space where Asian women can come together, right? And they can talk to each other. They get support. They can ask questions. They can learn from each other. There are a plethora of resources out there. But still, we talk to people, and people are like, you know what? I don't know where to get started from AI. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't know what to do. There is just so much. There's information overload. So we were like, okay, let's go ahead. Let's start this community. What is it that we felt that we would have liked to have, right? We want somebody to hold our hand. Somebody I can go and talk to and ask questions. I don't have to worry about whether it's a dumb question, what somebody is going to think about me. So we were like, we want to make sure that there is mentorship, right? Then we also wanted to make sure that when people come to the community, what is it that we want them to take away from it, right? We want them to be able to learn from other people's experiences. We want them to acquire skills, right? And say that, you know what, I actually took something back, right? So, of course, it's not just about representation. We also wanted it to be able to rewrite the narrative, right? So we started thinking that, okay, how are we going to do that, right? We started hosting conversations where we have two distinct series, where we get one series is where we get trailblazing women who come and talk about how they learned and navigated the ropes and how they've made it where they are today, whether, you know, they are founders or they're, you know, having leadership roles at companies like Google, AWS, Amazon, Microsoft, and all these places. And then there is a second group of women who are like, you know what, I want to give back to the community and I want to teach something to somebody, right, that they can pick up skills and hands-on skills and say, yes, I know how to develop, you know, a rack pipeline. I know how to use AI in marketing, right? So we have like these skill-based learning workshops and these webinars. And the idea is to push the field of AI to be more inclusive, more human-centered, but also giving an opportunity to Asian women to come and talk and share, right? And acquire that confidence. Because unfortunately, we've, you know, garnered this reputation that, hey, we are quiet. And often our quietness is taken as a sign of weakness, right? We are not weak, right? It's just like a cultural thing that the way we were raised, that, hey, you know, letting other people speak is a sign of respect, right?
Yes.
It's a sign of being humble, right? It's not that we don't have a voice. So we're like, okay, and now 8 months from the time we launched, we are 500 plus members. How many exactly now? How many? 520?
530 something.
So yeah, we are incredibly proud and we want this to be a global hub. So we have just gotten started and we want this to be a global hub. We have members not only in the US, but we have people, you know, members from Asia, we have members from Europe, and we hope
Australia,
Australia. So we hope this to be a global hub to inspire Asian women, and we want them to collectively come and shape the future of AI.
Definitely. I mean, thank you so much for spearheading this initiative, because at the end, someone has to start from somewhere, right? And you both took the charge, thought about this, that we need more Asian women presence in the AI and tech landscape. I do feel like it's really great, and I do ask my listeners to support this initiative. Try to get on to the AWAR page and try to get yourself as a member there, because I'm pretty sure that UV Camp Padmini will definitely appreciate your support as this community is
growing. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for doing that. And I'm great to kind of like, I'm feeling honored that, you know, like, you know, I have two AI esteemed guests. They started something that's nobody ever thought before, because they are a growing concern about like the Asian people and women in general are not being in the leadership role. And maybe it's because we are a little submissive in the, you know, and that's why we need to give them a platform where they are coming in and they can talk about, you know, speak up their mind, and they can talk about their innovation, and they also share their ideas without thinking about they are not, you know, stepping on someone's shoes, which they always probably think. And that's kind of a cultural barrier we have. So I love the initiative. Please let me and my listeners know how can we support to grow your community further and help nourish more Asian women in the AI and tech landscape. Thank you so much for your perspective on this one. I was really honored to know about your journey in this space so far. And I get to see the community is growing. So now, since we kind of like started that, I have one more question for you. And that is something you probably touched upon a little bit, but I still wanted to resurface that one more time. Like, you know, as you mentioned, like, despite growing awareness around diversity and tech, why do you think like women, especially Asian women, remain underrepresented in AI leadership and research? And what do you think as a AI thought leader that needs to be changed in the societal aspect or even the industrial aspect to promote more Asian women in the leadership role, especially in the AI leadership and research and, you know, enterprise area? And I would like to start with Yuvika first.
Thanks so much, Sam. And it's such an important question, because and of course, alluding to some of the points that we briefly touched upon. So the underrepresentation of Asian women in AI leadership is not due to lack of talent, right? We all know that, you know, Asian women are, you know, strong. I think it's because of the structural and cultural barrier that often goes unnoticed. So, of course, we talked in depth about biases and stereotypes, and there is a stereotype, right, that Asian women are technically strong, but we are not outspoken, or some of them are not leadership material. So, and as Padmini had also pointed out, right, we tend to take things, okay, yes, I'll execute. So Asian women are typecasted as doers rather than visionaries. And add to that the cultural challenges, right? Being in environments where the contributions are sometimes undervalued, and where mentorship and sponsorship is also scarce. So many of us are or have navigated cultural expectations around humility, conformity, silence, and which can often conflict with dominant norms, you know, which come with tech leadership. So what we feel, you know, would be important is we need to change how we define leadership and excellence in AI. And we need more inclusive leadership pipelines, more diversity for diverse, you know, role models, right? We need to have more visibility around those that, hey, I now see an Asian woman, you know, leading an XYZ company. And you can see that like at companies like a Chanel, I'm like so proud to see like, you know, Lina Nair, you know, leading, you know, Chanel, and then Indira Nui was leading you know, Pepsi, you know, back in the days, right? So we need to have more visibility for these diverse role models, and we need to have more intentional efforts to create safe and equitable spaces for marginalized voices, right? So it's not just about adding women, it's about valuing what they bring and changing the system to actually reflect that.
No, that's great. Over to you, Padmini.
Yeah, pretty much. I think Yuvika covered almost all of it. I was reading somewhere about even in our workforce, just not Asian women, just general global workforce, about, I think, did I say 26% of the workforce is, you know, women in what's the leadership roles. And when it comes to, I think, academia, it's something else. It's still very low. And in fact, we had a session very recently in our Y community, which said that, you know, at the start of your career, you see a lot of women applying for these roles. But as the career progresses, when you look at the bar graph of an Asian woman, it goes down into like the single digits, you know, to go getting to those leadership roles, whereas that is not the case for men or, you know, women from other races. So this, like Yuvika said, there is a lot of it. There's a lot of cultural, quote unquote, baggage that we carry about, you know, deference, humility and all that, which is considered just be considered good quality. You know, you don't speak up, you don't, you know, that you're being deferential, polite, etc. But now that has to change. You have to have your voice heard, and it is not all doom and gloom. That is changing. You know, when I go back to India, I see that change is there, and you know, people are speaking up. There are more voices being heard. So it is on the uptick, and communities like Awai are, you know, are helping also grow that. So it is, we would love to sort of support such, if there are other initiatives like this, we'd love to collaborate with them as well to amplify this voice. So yeah, I think,
yeah. I mean, just wanted to wrap up this thing. There's one thing just came to my mind, you know, there's a famous quote from my favorite TV series, Ted Lasso.
I like that. I love that.
Yeah.
Just be curious about the Asian woman in the leadership. Don't be judgmental about what they can or what they cannot do.
Yeah.
I mean, I just wanted to wrap up by saying this one.
Yeah. Thank you. That's great.
Something that we definitely have to think about. And thank you for giving the platform to the future Asian woman in the AI tech and leadership space. But it's very necessary. And I feel like it's a doctor order right now, especially in this current spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I do want to see that there are more rising Asian woman leaders coming through your forums from your organization that's going to like shape up the journey of AI tech and landscape in many years to come. So thank you so much for what you've been doing.
Thank you.
So as we wrap up, I would like to hear your final thoughts or kind of words of wisdom for the newbies who are trying to grow into the AI governance and landscape, especially for the Asian women. Any final message that you would like to share for my listeners over here? I'd like to start with Padmini, and then we wrap up with Yuvika's thoughts on that.
Sure. Yes, I would like to frame this across like education, exposure, and experience. You know, so I would like to say that for your listeners out there, you know, upskill in AI. I always believe the first step to AI, you know, on your AI journey is AI literacy. So make sure that you, if you're on the technical side, make sure, you know, you understand what model evaluation is, what those metrics are. If on the ethical side, understand the frameworks, make it a habit to enroll in courses, you know, read relevant journals, and even, you know, tweet about it, about your takeaways. So that will sort of reinforce that learning. So that is the education part. Then the exposure part would be, don't be siloed in your little, you know, area. Get out into the broad community, you know, speak on, come to Hawaii, speak on our panel, you know, attend meetings. And I always, especially Asian women, I tell women that turn on the camera. When you join a webinar, don't keep your camera off and just be, you know, quiet. Turn on the camera, ask a question, especially in AI right now. There is no stupid question. There never was a stupid question, I guess. But, you know, ask those questions and make sure that, you know, you're not just seen, you're heard, and you also share. And then from an experience standpoint, you know, there are so many tools out there. I always like, this is what I've heard Noel say, that the best time to start on the AI journey was yesterday, and the better time was day before yesterday. So start today, start right now, you know, pick a model. There are so many free tools out there. There's so many videos. There's ChatGPT and Claude that you can talk to, and use all that to your advantage, and actually go hands on keyboard, you know, learn by actually doing. And all this while you have like this ethical framework in your mind, and connect with us. And, you know, we'd love to sort of support people on this journey. So yeah, so educate yourself, expose yourself to these tools, and then have the experience to actually do it.
Thanks, Padmini. Over to you, Vika, for final notes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just to kind of thinking back off of Padmini's thing, like learning by doing, whenever somebody asks that, okay, how do I learn AI? Okay, it was like, yes, you need to get the fingers on the keyboard. But one thing I would say is that you don't need to be, you know, a data scientist, right? You don't need to be like a hardcore PhD. And the first thing I would say is like, don't be intimidated, right? You don't need to be a technical expert to make a meaningful contribution, right? And if you're looking specifically at AI governance, it's a field where we need diverse voices, right? Like from law, from policy, ethics, product design, and lived experiences from impacted communities. Because AI governance is just not about compliance, it's about shaping the future of how technology interacts with people and power, right? It's about asking the tough questions: who benefits, who's left out, right? What values are you embedding in the system? And our role is not just to raise alarms. I know that sometimes the AI governance folks get like, you know, a bad rep. The goal is to build bridges, right? Help people understand why, you know, behind the responsible AI, and bring others along. So be the translator, be the storyteller, be the connector. And finally, like, stay grounded and stay hopeful. The whole space around AI governance is not a checklist, right? It's a journey. So you want to make sure that you face tensions, you know, trade-offs, and put every effort, right? Even a small effort to make AI more fair, transparent, and accountable is actually going to help move that needle forward. So anybody who's stepping in the space, AI, or specifically AI governance, I love that, we need you. we need your curiosity, we need your courage and your conviction. So let's make AI better together.
Love that. Thank you for this enlightening conversation. And to my listeners, remember that the future of AI isn't predetermined. It's actually being shaped by the choices we make today. That's why we had this conversation with AI and governance, because the choices we make today is going to shape our future, especially in the AI landscape. And if you're interested in learning more about Asian Women Advancing AI's work, I'll share some links in the podcast description, so please check them out. And thank you so much, Pabin and Yuvika, for this conversation today. And bye to my listeners. Please stay tuned for my next episode. We'll be coming in shortly. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for having us, Sam. We had a great time chatting with you.
Yeah.